there are a few that come out every year of really outstanding women that absolutely smash targets that men have set before. And it's fantastic that there's a few, but what we'd really love is more women to be able to put themselves forward and take advantage of these opportunities and have these adventures. And certainly, I think in the past, it was so common to hear that women have given up their careers to have children. But now I think women are giving up their passions and their personal interests to have both careers and children. So in a sense, we're really being stretched too far.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you are listening to The Fix. It's a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. Today on the podcast, you'll be hearing from Sophie Montang and Major Nix Wetherill. They are two extraordinary women who are part of the Ice Maidens, which is the first all-woman team to ski across Antarctica using muscle power alone. On this episode, you'll hear about the team's record-breaking expedition, which is such an incredible story because it showcases the power of women working together to overcome insurmountable odds. Each of these women will also share the life lessons they both learned when it comes to teamwork, leadership skills, and mental resilience, which each of us can apply to working life. An incredible team of six women made history by surviving 61 days on ice, making it through storms, debilitating sickness and exhaustion, relying 100% on each other. But their journey began way before they ever started the trek. Here Nix shares how she came up with the idea for Ice Maidens.
It was all sort of came about from when I'd gone to hear somebody talk about their journey in the Antarctic, and they were a doctor, and sort of the challenges that they had faced, and I was listening to him, and I thought, I'm not just happy just listening to this guy, I want to go and experience it myself. And so I went up to him at the end of the talk and said to him, have you got any tips on how I can get involved in something like this? And he said, I was in the right place at the right time. And I was like, that's not really a great tip. But it did make me realize that I had to sort of start the process. I could wait forever for this kind of opportunity to come along. It might never come. So rather than wait for it, actually just go and set it up myself. But that was where the idea came from. And then to make it an all-female team, essentially, you know, in the army, it's a very male-dominated environment. And I'm often the only woman on lots of adventurous training courses. So like kayaking, skiing, climbing, anything. And I realized that that wasn't a true representation of the number of women within the rest of the army. So that was where the second bit of the idea came from, to make it an all-female team.
After a rigorous selection process, only 6 out of 250 women were chosen to take part in Ice Maidens. In addition to the intense physical training, Sophie shares other challenges that she had to overcome.
This was the problem, certainly for me, because I was the only member of the team that had never served full-time with the military, and I was just a desk dweller who had this weekend hobby of playing soldiers. And so joining that team, and with all of those people who had whole military careers and loads of training that was relevant to this kind of situation, I felt like the real outsider. I did feel that I didn't know what I had to offer. Certainly absolutely crippled with imposter syndrome and couldn't work out why anyone would want me on their team. So actually, making it onto the final team was the biggest confidence boost I think I've ever had. And since then, it's been pretty life-changing. In these kind of situations, you want to have different ways of looking at that situation for safety reasons or for the sort of purposes of team bonding and leadership and stuff. You've got to have some that are leaders and some that are followers. And so it was good that I was the only one that hadn't been to Sandhurst and been trained as a leader. So at least I wasn't trying to control everything. I was going to be a follower from the beginning, and that it was good to know your place, I think.
Nix says that before the trip, the team got the help of army psychologists to mentally prepare them for the physical hardship, teamwork, and isolation.
Well, it was 1,700 kilometres, which is the equivalent distance of London to Venice. It's across very cold, isolated, barren terrain with not much to see. There's a few mountains to start with, and then it just peters out to nothing. So it's very much like a flat white hamster wheel. And it had a lot of challenges along the way, be it weather, physical challenges, mental challenges. But it was, you know, it was an epic experience.
Here, Sophie describes what they had to endure in order to achieve their record-breaking goal.
The record we set out to break or to set really was to be the first female team to ski across the continent using muscle power alone. So the important bit there is that we weren't using kites, which could make you ski a lot faster. We weren't using dogs because dogs were banned in Antarctica back in the 90s. So it was really just a case of putting one foot in front of the other for a really long amount of time. And especially in a sort of today's world where you can have technology and, you know, mechanized vehicles to help you get anywhere at any time, it was kind of nice to take it back to that traditional method of transport of just, you know, proper hard slog, carrying obviously a sledge behind us with everything that we needed in it. So we'd have about 80 kilos of kit to take with us individually, including tent, stove, food, fuel, and obviously all the warm clothing that we'd need.
But for Sophie, the toughest part of the journey happened even before the team's expedition began, as she had to overcome her experience with imposter syndrome.
It was on our final training expedition, and it was the kind of crucial stage of team selection, and there were seven of us that were still in contention, and only six were going to go, and I wasn't getting on that well with one of the other team members. Well, I felt that I wasn't. I don't think she really noticed. But I really thought, right, I'm not performing as well as I should. I don't think I'm going to make the team. And I'd absolutely convinced myself that I was going to be the reserve because it was the worst possible scenario that I could think of. So halfway through that expedition, I'd pretty much taken myself out of the game, thinking I wasn't going to make it onto the team, which was a really, really hard place psychologically, and it's probably the darkest place I've been in the whole of the ice maiden process. But then actually, there was still something inside that was saying, well, I don't think I'm going to make it, but I'm not going to give up. So that was a real crucial point, I think, was to think, I don't think I've made the team, but you just never know, and holding on to that last bit of hope and still trying to perform at my best and be the best version of me and try and make that team. And obviously, I assume that worked out because Nyx did pick me in the end.
Meanwhile, as the leader, Nyx had the weight of the whole team on her shoulders.
I had lots of difficult moments. Obviously, there's a lot of preparation that's required and administration and just fitting that all around your normal job as well. And having that sort of energy to just keep moving everything forward at times was really difficult. But I think actually when it all came to it, you know, so long as I could always see the benefit of what we were doing and actually moving forward, then it was all worth it. So the hardest thing was probably on the actual expedition, and it's again comes down to sort of that teamwork side of things. And just I noticed that there was a bit of a split in the group, and I knew it was sort of my responsibility to do something about it, because that could end in potential failure of the team to stay together and not being able to achieve our mission. And you know, having to sort of identify what to do and try to manage everything for the benefit of the whole team.
As a team composed of all women, Nyx says that she believes this actually made it easier for team members to ask for help and share their challenges. And Sophie says that their honesty towards each other, especially under stressful conditions, strengthens the team even more.
I think actually when the expedition finished was the one thing that we all looked back on and we said, yeah, it was amazing to go to the South Pole, and yes, we've broken records and we've been to Antarctica and that was incredible, but actually the real overwhelming most positive thing I think for most of us was actually that sense of teamwork and that sense of knowing each other so incredibly well. And bear in mind we didn't know each other at all 2 years before, I think that's quite a thing to achieve. But it was for me probably the thing I was most worried about before the expedition was actually that it was an all-female team, and I was worried that that would then create a dynamic that was going to be difficult to handle out on the ice. But as Nyx said, I think because we've all got a similar mindset in the military, because we got to know each other really well, and I think most importantly because we all opted into this concept of psychological safety and be really open and honest about our feelings and asking for help, I think really did manage to break down some of those competitive sides of ourselves that we'd had during the selection process. So it's quite difficult to go from a competitive selection process to then being the final team and then unpicking that sort of mentality of just toughing everything out and getting on with it, and instead being able to say, open yourself up and say, look, I'm struggling today, I could do with your help, and that was probably the single most important thing that we did in terms of building our teamwork on the expedition itself.
Here, Sophie tells us the secret to their team's success and the lessons they learned throughout this journey.
The teamwork for us was all about really, really getting to know each other. So through the training we did, we got to push each other in situations when we were scared, where we were absolutely out of energy, when people were getting frustrated and angry. And having been through all of those situations together, we then learned how to read each other, how to say the right thing. You know, normally we think with intuition that you know, we instinctively know the right thing to say to somebody when they're annoyed or upset, because we think what we'd want to hear. But it doesn't mean it's necessarily the same for me as it is perhaps for Nick's. So it was really sort of being careful to work out what each individual needs to motivate them, to remember that, and then being able to apply it in every situation. And I think that really was an important aspect for us. Probably the second point was just being able to create that environment of openness and complete trust. And I think that's something that, you know, having worked in a corporate environment, it's pretty much completely the opposite of my experiences of business life, in that nobody knows anybody's salary. Nobody knows if someone wants to promote. There's a very much a sort of atmosphere of keeping ambitions under wraps and your intentions. People's goals are all very different, and people don't feel they can necessarily share them. So the fact that we were all 100% united around that one goal of getting the whole team across the continent, not just one or two members, but the whole six of us that started, that really helped to bind us together and put our egos to one side, forget about our personal goals and work on that. And I think that openness and sort of team unity was really what got us across in the end.
After a grueling 2 months, the team finally had the chance to celebrate with family and friends who welcomed them back to the United Kingdom. Nick shares what she misses most about her life-changing trip.
It was a very simple, remote life that really took you back to sort of nature and allowed you to actually just have time to think about who you are and what you want to be, and, you know, lots of deep, meaningful thoughts that you probably just don't have time to do now that we're back in our normal jobs. Yeah, there were difficult times, but actually the difficult times make the good times just so much better as well.
According to Sophie, she'll never forget the solitude and absence of external pressures during the expedition.
That simplicity of life was just the most amazing headspace, and not having to think about being a good daughter, being a good girlfriend, being a good manager, being a good employee, and just concentrating on the pretty much the three things that we had to do every day, which was just get up and keep skiing, look after yourself and look after your team, created this incredible, relaxing kind of white headspace that was just the most relaxing thing I think I've had since as long as I can remember. And just being able to feel that for once, for the first time in years, you're doing something really well and you know you're doing it well, and not having all of those external pressures and other commitments and all the multitasking just meant that for once you could feel confident and happy and feel content that you're achieving what you should be doing rather being pulled in a million directions.
And here Sophie shares what she took away from the whole experience.
Reflecting on, you know, women and being able to achieve things like that and why there aren't more women that are doing these kind of things. There are a few that come out every year of really outstanding women that absolutely smash targets that men have set before. And it's fantastic that there's a few, but what we'd really love is more women to be able to put themselves forward and take advantage of these opportunities and have these adventures. And certainly, I think in the past, it was so common to hear that women have given up their careers to have children. But now I think women are giving up their passions and their personal interests to have both careers and children. So in a sense, we're really being stretched too far and not able to actually go and do the things that we still really love.
Finally, Nick says that in building an all-women team, they weren't trying to prove to men what they can achieve. Instead, their aim was to inspire other women. Here, Nick shares advice on how women can work towards their goals, even if they seem impossible.
It was just a case of just, you know, speaking to everybody out there, making simple plans. You know, people look at us and say, oh my God, you're amazing. You've crossed Antarctica, which is incredible what we've done. I really relish that fact, but we did a lot of small steps to get to where we were. And it's not a case of going from zero to hero. It's, you know, long, hard work, but every step of the way pays off. And it doesn't have to be over a certain amount of time or a small amount of time. People work for this for a lifetime, and I had the idea 10 years ago and slowly started working out how to put those first steps in place, in order to be able to achieve it. So for anyone out there, I would say, you know, get your end goal and then just break it down into small, manageable chunks. And actually, you'll be surprised how easy it is to achieve each of them.
In Sophie's case, it was also a matter of overcoming self-doubt and applying to join the team.
I had no experience, absolutely pathetic in the cold, still am now. And I'd never trained for anything in my life, so I'd never done a marathon and I'd never committed something to this extent. But I think it's so important to, even if you think you can't do it, just to put your name into the hat, to put in that application. If there's something that grips you and you think, God, that sounds amazing, until you actually apply for it and you start going through the process, you're not going to find out what you're capable of yourself. And more importantly, hopefully other people will see things that you don't even know you're able to achieve yourself. And I think that for me has been probably the most eye-opening thing that I can now take into the rest of my life, when every time I doubt myself and I'm trying to make an excuse for not doing something, I try and say, right, get a grip, hold your nerve. Because actually, if you manage to pull off Antarctica when you can't even, you know, survive the British winter, then you really need to have a think about what you can achieve in other aspects of your life.
I loved interviewing these two ice maidens. Their story is one that so many women know all too well. As tough as their journey was physically, it was just as challenging for these women to overcome the mental difficulties associated with self-doubt. This week's fix is to be kind to yourselves when you take on challenges or start something new, and to recognize the imposter syndrome when it happens for what it really is, a sign that you're doing something meaningful. On today's Fairy Godboss Insights, we'll be sharing some tips on how to tackle the imposter syndrome. All of us, from time to time, will be confronted with feelings of self-doubt, but it's important to recognize when this happens and to have strategies in place for managing it. If you're suffering from a general lack of self-confidence, anxiety, or doubts about your abilities, achievements, accomplishments, or just feeling like you're not good enough, the chances are you may be experiencing the imposter syndrome. Here are a few things to remember which might help you tackle some of these feelings. Firstly, failing doesn't mean you're a failure. In fact, it's a pretty normal part of learning. Many people equate failure with simply not being good enough, so they believe they should just quit while they're ahead. And this is a major aspect of imposter syndrome. The truth is, there's no such thing as an overnight success. The second thing to remember is try not to compare yourself to others online. Comparing yourself to people's online curated content is only ever going to make you feel bad. To manage this, you might want to reduce the hours you spend online. Lastly, create your own definition of success. This definition is personal, and only you can decide what it means to you and your happiness. Make sure what you're chasing after is yours and yours alone, and not somebody else's ideal. Remember, many people suffer with these negative thoughts, which is why recognizing it and taking steps to manage it is so important. Thank you all for tuning in to today's episode. I'd also like to send my appreciation to everyone who joined our Third Love giveaway. We'll be announcing our winner this week on Instagram. That's it for now, and I hope you all have a fantastic week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.